Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Scheibel et al. Titled, Hypothermia Rewarming Disrupts Excitation-Contraction Coupling in Cardiomyocytes. This article published June 1, 2016. Joining me today are Associate Editor Leon DeWint, Lead Author Gary Seek, and content expert Yolanda van der Velden. Let's get started.
Thanks, Kara. So let's get started with a question to Gary. We were intrigued by this beautiful publication where you found that hyperthermia followed by rewarming increases cardiac troponin I phosphorylation and it alters calcium sensitivity and contractile function in isolated cardiomyocytes. So I'm really glad that we have Yolanda van der Velde on the line. Yolanda is a long-term expert in myofilament biology. And Yolanda, do you have any questions for Gary, maybe?
Yes, thank you, Leon. Beautiful paper. I'm, of course, intrigued by apparently the central role which the myofilaments play in this protocol where you induce hypothermia and rewarming. But basically, my first question would be, Gary, could you briefly explain the overall aim of the study which you've performed?
This study actually represents a long-term collaboration I've had with colleagues at the University of Tromsø in Norway. If you don't know, Tromsø is located about 350 kilometers north of the Arctic Circle. For those of us in the U.S., that's a little over 220 miles north of the Arctic Circle. It's a beautiful location, but unfortunately, a few people have accidents and fall into the fjords or go skiing, and they become hypothermic. And my colleague, Dr. Tavita, is a critical care physician. Tromsø is the largest trauma center in the Arctic region in Norway, and he became fascinated by the patients that he saw that actually went into heart failure if they were rewarmed inadequately or inappropriately. For a number of years, he's been exploring this, and he came to my lab a little over 10 years ago and wanted to explore underlying molecular mechanisms that could account for the heart failure that he saw in his patients. And in papillary muscle, we saw that hypothermia rewarming caused a decrease in the calcium sensitivity of contraction. And we saw that it also caused a change in the phosphorylation of troponin I. But this was papillary muscle, so to explore this further, we wanted to drill down and look at isolated cardiomyocytes. And we replicated what we found in papillary muscle, that troponin I phosphorylation does occur, abnormal troponin I phosphorylation, and that it's due, we think, to activation of a kinase, a PKA, within these cardiomyocytes. A number of people would think that inotropic drugs such as epinephrine might be very helpful in that respect because it's a very common inotropic drug. In another study with Dr. DeVita, we showed that that's actually not appropriate since it has a negative inotropic effect after hypothermia and rewarming. So I think our studies have provided considerable insight as to the molecular mechanisms underlying this very different type of heart failure that's very rapidly induced in patients undergoing accidental hypothermia.
Yes, thank you, Gary. Do you think that the desensitization of the myofilaments for calcium actually underlie this high calcium load during low temperatures?
It could be related to either calcium release from the sarcoplasmic reticulum. We have noted in a study that we're now publishing that there's an increase in reactive oxidant species formation during hypothermia rewarming. Reactive oxidants can affect the ryanodine receptors and increase the open probability of ryanodine receptors and therefore increase the calcium transient. On the reverse side, there's some indication that the calcium clearance mechanisms are slowed as well. So the sarcoplasmic endoplasmic reticulum calcium ATPase pump, the CIRCA pump, can be inhibited. That would slow the uptake of calcium back into the SR. And it's possible that the sodium calcium exchanger is also affected, so the clearance of calcium through that mechanism would also be affected. After rewarming, however, the calcium transient very rapidly returns back to normal. So these things are reversible.
Yeah, so if you would think about a therapeutic intervention, which target would you like most?
Well, it's very interesting. We've tried levosimendan, which targets troponin C, and we've seen some fairly good results with levosimendan. Now, that doesn't target troponin I phosphorylation, but troponin C. We immediately thought of epinephrine, but then our molecular studies really clarified that for us, and we were counterproductive in using something like epinephrine because of its effect on cyclic AMP. As far as I know, there is nothing right now that targets troponin I phosphorylation directly. We have been very interested recently in looking at the phosphatases because we think that the phosphatase might also be affected by hypothermia rewarming. Calcineurin is one of the phosphatases that could be affected. It would be very interesting if we could target activation of phosphatase activity. But of course, that would have a more than an effect just on troponin I phosphorylation, as you point out. There's a number of things that are phosphorylated.
Yes, so apart from the drug treatments, do you think alternative methods may be available to intervene at the myofilament level?
I do think that there's spontaneous recovery in these people if rewarming occurs in a controlled fashion. So the first bet would be to try to reduce the mechanisms that lead to troponin I phosphorylation itself. Anything that would reduce cyclic AMP levels would be a reasonable approach. As I mentioned before, trying to activate phosphatases would be a reasonable approach.
Apparently, the hypothermia is related with heart failure. Do you think that really the desensitization of the myofilaments is central to this heart failure phenotype, which you then see in this specific group of patients?
That raises a very interesting point. You get to about 24, 25 degrees centigrade, and in humans, the heart stops, as you know. There's asystole. We have looked at what happens if we do our study, hypothermia rewarming, in the absence of action potential or activation of the heart. If we conduct our studies in asystole, we actually see a preservation of contractile function of calcium sensitivity. That, to me, suggests that the cessation of a heartbeat, asystole, might be a protective mechanism as we become more and more hypothermic. This would suggest that first responders should not try to restart the heart immediately out in the field and should wait, transport the patients, conduct CPR to get circulation going through the patient, but not try to start the heart until they get back to the trauma center and can do that in a controlled fashion.
Is there anything known about how you should prevent mitochondrial damage?
We have very good evidence that during hypothermia rewarming, the mitochondria produce reactive oxidants. The reactive oxidants, in turn, can cause mitochondrial damage, and we do have some evidence for mitochondrial damage as well. So one potential target would be to scavenge the reactive oxidants during hypothermia, and that might be an alternative approach in treating patients, is to provide them with reactive oxygen scavengers. So underlying everything might be the changes that we see within mitochondria during hypothermia.
So, Leon, do you have any question for Gary?
Just two more questions. Gary, I'm going to try to find a real-life correlate of this experiment, okay? So a lethal hypothermia of the core body temperature has already reached at, 24, 26 degrees Celsius. That will be 25 to 79 degrees Fahrenheit for those who live in the States. And because the heart is placed internally in our thorax, it's maybe unlikely that it will ever face a temperature of 15 degrees Celsius, right? Unless a human being is deceased. So one muscle type, I was just wondering, one muscle type that may experience these very severe cold spells of 15 degrees Celsius is skeletal muscle. Do you think that similar mechanisms might be operative in skeletal muscles?
I had a great fortune when I was in Tromsø to sit next to and actually have dinner with a person that he had a little too much to drink one night, fell into a fjord. About an hour later, his friends dragged him out and started CPR and then called the ambulance. And by the time they got everything going and transported back to the trauma center, it was several hours. And by the time they got him completely rewarmed and had his heart started again, it was 7 hours. This person had no deficits whatsoever. And it was just absolutely fascinating to me to realize that our bodies can go down to this temperature and we don't die. I haven't heard of any skeletal muscle weaknesses that result, at least on the long term.
So Gary, maybe as a final question, as you know, our journal really promotes the careers of young scientists, and we noticed Nicole Scheibel is the first author. Did she use this in her dissertation maybe, or was this central in her work?
This actually was Nicole Scheibel's thesis research. She did a fantastic job in putting this together. Nicole comes from a very different type of background. She's an electrical engineer by training, but when she came into the lab, learned physiological sciences and was able to apply her engineering skills to this very interesting but sometimes complicated question.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.